describe a wave function. And we view the wave function as a mathematical symbol to describe a quantum fluctuation. Basically, wave function means it's a superposition of a different classical configuration. And the wave function specifies the coefficient of the superposition. You know, superposition is a new quantum phenomenon. We don't have such classical analog. So therefore, because our language developed a classical phenomena, we don't have a language, I don't have words for this superposition. So we try to describe superposition as a fluctuation. The fluctuation actually is something varying in time, you know. But actually, superposition have no such thing. It's just some particular combination of a different classical configuration. But nevertheless, we say, well, it's a fluctuation, means that it's kind of, it can go here, it can go there, but actually there's no time component. But anyway, since we call this superposition a quantum fluctuation, then it's natural, using the same train, we describe quantum fluctuation as a dancing pattern. And so therefore, we can using the dancing rule, local dancing rule, to describe a dancing pattern. In the last class, we described that a very simple dancing rule for superfluid is just if you move position one particle, then the wave function don't change. Then this very simple dancing rule actually gave us a superfluid order. And then we discuss another dancing rule where the spin down is like a background. Then the spin up would form a loop. That's the first dancing rule. So the spin up all form a closed loop with no end. But however, the ground state is a superposition of those loops. It's kind of like a superposition of loop gaps. And to describe this coefficient superposition, we're again using this dancing rule. That is, if you change shape of a loop, if you deform the string of up spins, then the amplitude don't change. So that's the first rule. The second rule is that even if you reconnect this string in this way, the amplitude don't change. So follow this dancing rule, then we find that this dancing rule totally determines the wave function. You know, for all kinds of loops, the wave function is equal to 1. Let me see. Why? How do you see that? The reason for this is that these two moves are egotic. means starting from any configuration, you can go to any other configuration. For example, starting from a one loop, using this rule, we can go to different shape. And using the second rule, we can go to two loop, which we reconnect this part, and et cetera. So therefore, using this rule, you can change the number of loops. You can change the shape of loops arbitrarily. However, these two rules tell us these two moves don't change amplitude. So therefore, the wave function amplitude will be the same for arbitrary shape of loop, for arbitrary number of loops. So that's why this dancing rule totally determines the wave function. Okay. Any question here? Yes?
Superposition is a quantum phenomenon, not classical. Don't we see mechanical waves being superposed? How is it a solely quantum phenomenon?
Very good question. And so in a mechanical wave, suppose we have this kind of wave. Okay. And this wave is one configuration. And then this is another configuration. It's just another state. So in quantum mechanics, this wave represents, this shape represents a particular eigenstate. And this represents another eigenstate, which are these two orthogonal. Because those waves are the position of the speeds, you know. If a particle have different position, they are orthogonal. If you add these two together, you'll have a, I don't know how to, you have some, you know, some other way. And this actually is a third configuration. They are orthogonal to these two. So these are real classical waves. The quantum wave, also using the wave, is only mathematically similar to this. But you know, single particle wave function is not really, don't have this this interpretation. Yeah. And so therefore, although this phenomenon interference and compose each other do also exist in classical wave, but however in quantum physics, the concept of state changes. The concept of state change. In classical physics, we have state one, state two, state three, and that's all. There's no such thing as a neither state one or state two, or both state one, state two. And in quantum mechanics, this one exists. That's really entanglement or superposition. So that's really, So there's an exclusiveness in classical states. That's if you're in state one, it's not in state two. Even for classical wave, we have this property. If this shape, it's not this shape. But for quantum wave, I don't want to say quantum wave, I just say quantum states, or quantum state superposition, the concept are different. Yeah, so that's why quantum mechanics is so counterintuitive, because this exclusiveness of the state is no longer there. So we do have this such thing as a, it's in both state one, state two, although two states are different. And so this is a really good question. That's for the single qubits, for the particle with a few degree freedom, this superposition is already pretty counterintuitive, complicated. Now we are want to study its consequence of this kind of strange superposition entanglement. We have a many degree freedom. And what is the consequence of this quantum mechanical entanglement of superposition when you have many degree freedom? And so you will get a lot of even more counterintuitive results, but which is supported by this quantum mechanical phenomenon. It's really a quantum mechanical phenomenon. Yes?
I'm sorry, I'm slightly confused. I thought you always need an additional dancing rule, which is generating one loop.
Yeah. Thank you for that, because I want to say that this is surely partly right. For the mathematician, actually, this two mu is not really idiotic. One need to add one rule, is that one loop is equal to no loop. If you don't have any loop, then these two things cannot do anything. And so we have to connect one loop to no loop states, to bring this no loop state into the picture. But in physics, it's not matter because of a big system, the amplitude for no loop state is very tiny, so losing this one state doesn't matter that much. But this is very important. Okay, mathematically, this is important. Okay, so and so today we are going to talk about this. This local dancing rule actually is imposed by the Hamiltonian because the ground state is a state which minimizes total energy of Hamiltonian. So once you have a Hamiltonian, you know the ground state. But the Hamiltonian only contains short-range interactions. So it's very natural that the Hamiltonian only determines the relation wave function when the configuration only have a local change. So it's pretty natural that the Hamiltonian determines the local dancing rule. The local dancing rule in turn determines the global dancing pattern, which means a global wave function. Okay. So the question about what Hamiltonian gave rise to this two dancing rule? Okay. And so here, let me just write down this Hamiltonian. I'll do that for the Kaggle lattice. For the Kaggle lattice, which is also for the Hamiltonian lattice. Actually, I draw the picture over there. So this is like a Hamiltonian lattice, but actually the spin in our system form a Kaggle lattice because the spin live on the link of a Hamiltonian lattice. So that's where spin is. Okay. And so we say that the down spin, maybe let's change this reference. We say the up spin is a reference. So up spin means nothing. Because everything is up, there means empathy. We just define that as empathy. Then down spin means something. Okay. So first rule is that the down spin want to form loops. They do not want to form they do not want to have open end. Okay. Suppose everywhere is up speed, so this dot means up speed. And then if you put a down spin here, okay, so we can view this down spin as a this small segment string. Okay, so then they have two n. We say this is bad. If you put another down spin here, you say, okay, the string getting longer. Then here is okay, we repaired here. So this is good, this point is good, because string going through it. But we have two n here, this one is bad. Okay. And from this picture, we immediately see that to make spin join together to form a loop, we should examine the vertex. The vertex have three neighboring spins. If there are two down spins, they are good. If it have one down spin or three down spins, that's bad. So we just examine at each vertex and examine three neighboring spins to see how many down spins do we have. We want even number down spins. All number down spins is bad. Even is good. So that this kind of interaction of Hamiltonian would enforce the down spin would have become a string and the string one from closed loop with no open end. So that gives us this the first term, the Hamiltonian. Maybe let me just write this way. Sigma z1, sigma z2, sigma z3. So for every vertex, I is a vertex. Big I label the vertex. Then for this vertex, we have 1, 2, 3. So we just multiply this sigma z of this three spin around each vertex. Okay. So if every spin is up, means sigma z is equal to 1. So this product equal to 1. That's good. And if there are two down spin, then sigma z and down spin is minus 1. When I have two down spin, then their product is equal to 1. So the product of 3 sigma z, when I have two down spin, one up spin, is still equal to 1. So 1 is good. But when you have one down spin here, this is bad. But this product is minus 1. So minus 1 is bad. Plus 1 is good. Minus 1 is bad. And so that's how we reflect here. If their product is a plus 1, the energy is negative. It's good, so we lower the energy. If this product is positive, negative, then this minus 1 cancels, then your cost energy, U, actually cost energy to you. Because down, everything is up, you have energy minus U. If one down speed, the energy plus U, so the energy cost to you. Okay, so therefore, if you only have this, if you only have this term, we enclose this closed string dancing rule. The string are always closed, the closed string dancing rule. But if you don't have this term, it's not good enough. Because any closed string would make this equal to minus U. So the total Guangxi energy, will be equal to minus 2NU, that's N cell. So N is the number of cell. That's the number of hexagon. Okay. And the factor two coming from the following is that the number for vertex. So here, because on each vertex we have this term, the number for vertex is twice of the number of hexagon. So this is the property of honeycomb lattice. That's a counting. We are assuming periodic boundary condition. Okay. But this honeycombing is not so good because for any closed string configuration, it has this energy. So the huge deviancy. You draw any closed string, this term always equal to minus U, then it's just they all have the same energy. They're huge deviancy. And so we want to specify the closed string should form certain superposition to get two boundaries. So that is so therefore we have to add some other terms to enforce this one-two dancing rule. When the string shape changes, and when the string reconnect, the amplitude is the same. And only this kind of a wave function is Guang states. If amplitude are not the same, they are not Guang states. And so how to impose that? We'll be motivated by the superfluid dancing rule. When the particle move around, wave function don't change. How we enforce that dancing rule? We say we add a particle hopping term. We add a term which particle can hop around. When particle can hop around, then the ground state would prefer to be a superposition of all particle position. So here, this term only say the closed string is have a low energy, but the closed string is ideal state of this term. So closed string do not hop. So we need to add a term which make closed string hop. Hopping closed string means a string changes shape. Okay. And so how to make a string change shape? Well, we have this term, minus t. So let me just write it down. T, sigma x1, sigma x2, sigma x3, sigma x4, sigma x5, sigma x6. So this p is a plaquette. Okay, so we use some p to label plaquette. So this term is for each plaquette, for each hexagon. And the 1, 2, 3, 4, 6 is a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. So that's a 6 spin around hexagon. Yes?
I wanted to ask whether honeycomb lattice is somewhat special compared to the square lattice.
Honeycomb lattice is not special. You can do this on a square lattice. And maybe, I don't know if you plan to do this in Q-term. So largely lattice is not important. You can do this on any lattice. But I choose honeycomb lattice in this class for a particular reason. Because honeycomb lattice is only trivalence. And on a trivalence lattice, we don't have this kind of string crossing each other. So local topology are simpler. And this makes my next example simpler, which is a double summing model. And because when string cross, there's a, you say, should they resolve this? Should they think this string actually go this way? Or should the main string actually go this way? So there's some little bit of shuttle case. And that makes things a little bit more complicated. So actually, honeycomb lattice in this sense, we will try to generalize to more general string liquid. The honeycomb lattice has this advantage. On square lattice, we have to really resolve this crossing in some way. Okay. So this is Plaquet term. So let's examine, I claim this Plaquet term, hop string or one, changing shape of string. And how do you see that? Okay, remember, if everywhere we have spin, we have a no string. So let's start with this no string place. So everywhere we have spin. Then we say, when you apply this Plaquet term, what happens? This Plaquet term sigma x is a flip spin from up to down. Then what you do is that if ever is up spin, no string, but when you apply the Plaquet term, the flip all the spin to down. Then we have this small loop of a closed string. So Plaquet term actually create a small loop of closed string around this honeycomb, around the hexagon. So actually this Plaquet term enforces this third loop actually, add a little loop. And this minus sign here says that if a no string and a one loop have a plus superposition, if its superposition is this no string plus this, then it's lower energy for this. Because the minus sign prefer to have a plus superposition of two connected states. Okay. But actually, this Plaquet term do more. Because if you have already have a string, then we create a little string here, next to it. Then originally, there's a down spin here. Then the flip is an up spin. So there's a no string here. But other way, we add some down spin. So therefore, changing shape of a string. So Plaquet term not only creates string, it's also, when you already have a string, it's changing shape of string. Similarly, when you have two strings nearby, we will create this Plaquet term. Then again, it's a flip spin here, so another string here, it's a reconnect string. So therefore, the single Plaquet term do both three things. It creates a single loop. It can change the shape of string, or it can reconnect string. And if g is positive, then all this configuration want to be connected with the equal amplitude. That's what lower this energy. Okay. So, and that's it. So this is the Hamiltonian. So this is the Hamiltonian which enforce this local dancing rule. Okay. So that's and the wave function just the wave function just this for all kinds of strings, you know, which are equal to one. That's all. So the ground state wave function this is this. Okay. So now let's consider this so now we have a Hamiltonian of this. Let me say, okay, so what? So next is the fun stuff, you know. And so we have our concrete Hamiltonian, which gave rise to a particular wave function. And why we do this? And we claim actually the reason we do this is that we claim this wave function are very special, in the sense it's very far away from the product states. You know, as I mentioned, you know, in condensed matter, we study phase. But we usually using so-called this mean field theory to study phase diagram. And this mean field trial wave function is always product states. So therefore, accidentally, we study a lot of phase and phase diagram, but they are all product states. So we are familiar with product states. And here, we have an example where the ground states are very different from product states. When they are very different from product states, there are some amazing properties. So that's why we do this. And they are very different from states. Actually, this state can be so-called Langevin entanglement. It's highly, highly entangled. And because it's a Langevin entanglement, because it's highly, highly entangled, they have some quite amazing properties. So next, we'll go into this main topic of studying is the property of the highly entangled states. And this kind of a loop gas state, or Torre-Cotte state, is a simplest example of these highly entangled states. And but however, it really demonstrates many new phenomena exist in highly entangled states. So first, let me just go through some kind of a mathematical fact. The first fact is the first fact is that this Hamiltonian is a okay. So let's call this Qi. This is Fp. So for every vertex labeled by I, we have this kind of product operator. For every honeycomb or hexagon or plaquette, we have this six spin operator product. But this operator is very special. Qi at different I commute. Well, this is obvious, just sigma z. You know, sigma z always commute. And Fp at a different p commute. For different plaquette commute. Because they're all sigma x they commute. And what is surprising is that Qi for arbitrary vertex and Fp for arbitrary plaquette commute. This is not obvious. Because sigma z and sigma x, if they happen to be on the same side, then they aren't commute. They don't commute. But for this particular design, they actually commute. To see this is a following. So if you have if I is here, P is here, the speed don't overlap because this 1, 2, 3 will be for this 3 speed. Then this 1, 2, 3, 4, 6 will be for this 6 speed. Then no overlap, so they commute. So the trouble begins if I is here, P is here. Then they share spins. These two operators share some spins. They are potentially do not commute. But then if you look this closely, you find they always share two spins. Always two. No more, no less. And for every shared pair, one sigma x, sigma z, they aren't commute. There's a minus one. But when I have two pairs, these two minus sign cancels. Because they share two spins. So they commute. If they share one spin, then they do not commute. But they always share two spins. So this is a non-trivial fact. Okay. Then this because Hamiltonian and also obviously is we have also P equal to Q squared equal to one. And you can just plug in this either. So that means this operator is very simple. The eigenvalue for this operator is plus minus one. Either plus or minus one. Actually, you can also show that these two operators have zero traits. That means they have an equal number of plus one and minus one. So plus one eigenvalue and minus one eigenvalue are the same. Just half. Okay, those are simple mathematical facts. Then from here, we can open another very important fact. This Hamiltonian have an infinite conservation law. It's commutative with all the P and all the F, all the Qs. Okay. And so therefore, this Hamiltonian actually is exactly one. Okay. And we can see the Guangxi energy immediately. That is a minus 2n cell times n minus g or times u. Sorry, u times g. Okay, n cell times g. You may say, oh, you are too quick. You know, how do you see this? Well, actually, there's a very simple way to see it. You don't need to do any calculation. Those variable commute means they're like classical variables. We can individually specify their value. That's what happens to classical variable. But different class variable, you can individually specify their value. There's no concern for incompatibility. Because all this commute, we can individually specify their value. But their value have only two choices, plus one or minus one, because they're square equal to one. So we can individually specify the value of those Q or value for F. Those are eigenvalues. And for every specification of a value, there's an eigenvector correspond to that. Okay, that's a consequence. They all commute. You can individually specify plus or minus one for each of these qi and fp. And for each specific value, there exists eigenvector which gives you this value as an eigenvalue. Okay. So you get all the spectrum. You just individually specify all the plus one, minus one here. Whatever pattern you have, that's an eigenvalue. And all the possible choices give you the whole spectrum. That's soluble. So it's very easy to see that among all the choices, the lowest energy will be specified. All the Q equal to plus one, all the F equal to plus one, this has the lowest energy. Then you just count how many vertex. For every vertex, I get a plus one or minus U. For every honeycomb of every hexagon, you get the plus one there, but the minus G here. So then you get this result. Okay. And from here, we also obtain the following result. That is the quasi-particle energy gap. Remember, in the first class, we have been very careful to distinguish so-called the spectrum gap and the quasi-particle gap. And here, the quasi-particle gap is pretty simple to obtain. Is that if everywhere is plus one, it's ground state. If you make one of them from plus one to minus one, then we have some energy concentration there. And that's quasi-particle. But we have two types of quasi-particle. We can either make a Q from plus one to minus one to increase energy by 2U. So the one associated with the Q have energy gap 2U. And we can also make FP from plus one to minus one. Again, that's getting some energy. And this quasi-particle gap will show you is a flipping F. It's a 2G. And depending on whether U is bigger or G is bigger, that depends on which one is the lowest energy quasi-particle extension. But those are two. But amazingly for this problem, I will not go into this detail, but maybe in the station you'll do this more carefully. That's the spectral gap is either is a minimal of 4U or 4T. There's a tool there. Mm-hmm. And this is a string. You say, why is that? Because suppose U is big, G is small. Then the minimal excitation should be 2G. Why 4G? Mm-hmm. The reason is that we have a constraint. So I lied a little bit. I claim this Q and F can be plus or minus one arbitrarily, which I like. They're not quite, almost. Not quite because we do have this constraint. And this constraint can be seen in the following way. If you multiply qi here and the qi here, then they share this speed. Because qi here is part of this speed, qi here is part of this speed, they share this. So if you multiply qi here, then this thing became sigma z squared, disappeared. If you multiply qi for every vertex, then every spin was visited twice because this bin is containing this QI, this bin also containing this QI. So every sigma z in the QI is used twice. So actually we have every sigma z squared, which became plus one. So that's why we have this. Similarly, for FP, it's similar. Because if you multiply FP here, FP here, this spin is visited twice. We have sigma x squared here. If you multiply all the FP together, then all the spins are visited twice. We have a sigma x squared on every spin, just equal to 1. And that's all. You know, again, I'm not rigorous. There are no other constraints. So except these two constraints, they are free. So therefore, we cannot flip one QI from plus one to minus one. We cannot do that. Because we flip one QI, we violate this constraint. Because this constraint, or this identity, I won't say the constraint, it's really identity. That means we have the only valid extension is flipping both QI. But this is true for periodic boundary conditions. If you put the system on torus, we have this. If system have a boundary, then it's different. If system have a boundary, we don't have this constraint. But only for periodic boundary condition on a torus, we have this constraint. So therefore, magically, we can only flip Q and F in pairs. So this became another example of a topological excitation and the local excitation. It's like a flipping one. It's a topological. You know, if you flip one QI or FI, they are topological. And because the valid excitation only in pairs. Okay. So here let me just say this a little bit more. Maybe I'll poke on this later. And so there is such thing like the flipping one is kind of topological station because the spin, this is always occurring in pairs. Okay. And then there's one important thing I want to say is that QI actually have this picture. You can see. So what do you mean by what is a QI excitation? Oh yeah.
Does this have anything to do with the fact that if you open a string then you create two
M's instead of one? Exactly. So that's what I'm going to explain here. So what is flipping a QI? You know, if a string is always closed, then QI on every vertex equal to 1. Equal to 1 means either no string here or there's a string going through this, but no string ending here. If QI equal to minus 1, that means we have a string ending here. So we can have this situation. So we have a suppose we consider a configuration where this three spin is done. Then we interpret this three done spin as we have a string from here to here. Then QI will be equal to minus one at these two vertex. Okay. So this is a more direct way to see why QI equal to minus one always appear in pairs. Because the QI to minus 1 actually creates an end of a string. An end of a string always appears in pairs. You cannot create a single end of a string. So this is the reason why we say QI to minus 1 is a positive particle, but this one somehow is topological. We cannot get rid of it by flipping spin locally. Because this one end of string, we cannot make this end disappear by just flipping spins around. When you're flipping spin around, this animation to here or here, you can move them around. They cannot destroy it. Okay. This is very different from the excitation in the transversizing model or in the ferromagnets. In the ferromagnets, all spin up. The excitation is a single speed. You can destroy it by flipping spin back. You can go back to ground state, just flipping the down spin back to up spin. Then that's it. But here is a different. We cannot do it. So this means topological. So the excitation which cannot be destroyed by local operator is kind of topological excitation. And a topological excitation has some amazing properties. And so that's what I'm going to explain next. So in this class we're mainly concerned about the topological excitations. You know, excitation coming from we're created by single spin, we call this a local excitation. The local excitation have usual properties, don't have those interesting properties. So the constraint on topological excitation first. So any question here? Okay. So what is the property of a topological excitation or this end of string? So basically a topological excitation is end of string. Okay. So what's their properties? Okay. And so let's step back a little bit. So what we have achieved here? We have achieved here is that we have a very quantitative description of a wave function in terms of dancing rules, you know. And using the dancing rule, we can obtain even a local Hamiltonian, which enforces dancing rules. Okay. Once you have a Hamiltonian, we should know every property, everything about the property. And so starting from a quantitative description of dancing, we get a Hamiltonian, we get the properties. So basically, we kind of run through this program. From description of dancing, we know the property. So what property we want to study? So one property we want to study is a fractionalization. Some quantum number gets fractionalized. So first thing about the fractionalization is a fractional spin. Fractional angular momentum or fractional speed. And you know that when I learned the spin of the electron, it's always a mystery to me why spin 1/2, because orbital motion always gave you integer angular momentum. So the fact that electron have a spin means, to me, when I learned that first, it means electron have internal degree of freedom, because as spin up, spin down, there's something inside the electron. But if you think electron have internal degree of freedom, like something moving around each other, give you angular momentum, but that angular momentum should be integer. But why half integer? Very strange. And actually, this end of string, this topological excitation, can carry half integer speed. Actually, this explains the origin of a half integer speed. Okay. So why explain that? So first, let's say following. You know, certainly the orbital motion can only give an integer speed, that's for sure. Okay. And so then we ask, what is the speed of one end of string? The trouble is that we cannot create one end of string alone. We have to create them in pairs. We create them in pairs. And for sure, this pair, the pair of an end string, have an angular momentum integer. Because it's just a string. You know, no matter what string move around, the total angular momentum of a string, open string, is always integer. So the pair of the end have an integer speed. But that's leave a room that this pair of end, this each end may carry half integer. Because even when they are half integer, their summation is still integer by angular momentum addition. Certainly, they could be both integer. That's fine. or both half integer, that's also fine. And what is not fine is one integer, one half integer, which is not the case because these two are identical. So either both integer or both half integer. So at least from here, we at least have a puzzle, have a room. Maybe they could be half integer, you know. So because they're topological, you cannot create them alone. You can only create them in pairs, and the pair should have integer spin. But that does not rule out each end may have half integer spin. Okay. So this actually the original question, you know. So this the question of a spin of end string became interesting. It's not always integer, maybe half integer. But how do we see it's integer or half integer? Can we calculate that? Well, to calculate that is very simple. We just perform 360 degree rotation. Let me say, why do you do this? When you rotate the 3 by 2 pi, you do nothing. Which indeed is true. But however, here we explore a very special property of half integer spin. For half integer spin, 360 rotation do not do nothing. It's changing sign. You know, the wave function changing sign under 360. So actually, the half integer spin, you know, half integer spin is have a minus one. You know, maybe let's do this. Have is a minus sign on the 360 rotation. And this is we're going to explore. We do the 360 rotation to one string to see what happens. Okay, so let's do it. And here we will consider this again, this dancing pattern. You know, this the string can change its shape. Maybe I will not copy it. It's just dancing pattern over there. The string can change its shape and string can reconnect. There's no sign change. Okay. So first let's consider a state with a with one end of the string. Okay, so this is a string with one end. But here we have to be careful. Because this state actually, the string can fluctuate. So this is actually the superposition of this plus. You know, string can change its shape. You know, so we're just using this symbol to represent the superposition of this kind of states. And they can even reconnect, you know. You can even reconnect. You know, all kind of fluctuation, but this end is fixed, but other string can fluctuate and etc. So we're using this symbol to represent the superposition. Then we perform a 360 rotation here, just for this string, for this end string. If you do that, we go into this state go to if the 360 rotation is going to this state. We just rotate this. You know, then after 360, this go back at this time. But certainly this is called a straight string and this kind of hooked string. And this is again have a it's really a superposition of this one plus you know you can change the shape then plus you know you can add a loop but the most importantly this state can change into this state no. Going backwards, you can go there. So this was it, because if you do the reconnection here, then you know, this would go this way, this go that way, so that changed the direction of hooks. So therefore, so this going this way and that way will be the path. So that really means that these two symbols are actually the same. You know, if you include all the superposition, this state and this state is the same state. Okay, and this is important. So here, now with this knowledge, we can really kind of see we have fractional unimaginable. We already see that. The straight state going to the hook state. But hook state is not connected to straight state. That's a little bit strange. You know, we wish these two just equal, you know, or maybe they go after this, let me do this more carefully. After 360, we get these hook states. And we hope this just equal to straight state. Because, you know, under part, if you do this fluctuation string, then we hope this actually is a hook state, is a part of it. You can go there by string fluctuation. It's part of it. So that's this to be equal, then that means the 360 rotation do nothing. We go back for hook states. But amazingly, they don't do that. This hook state is not here. It's very important that this tail always go downwards when you're leaving the string. But you can change it any other place otherwise. So that's a game. And if you do that, this is not part of it. So this leaves another sector. It's not part of the fluctuation of this one. And that means something. So after 360 rotation, we don't go back. We get something else. And that means the unimaginable cannot be integer. Because if for integer, it has to go back, but it don't go back. These two states are not the same. Okay, so let's perform a 360 rotation on these states. Do that again. But before we do this, we're using this relation. We say these two are the same. Indeed, these two can flash into each other by the reconnection move here. Okay. And then we perform a 360 rotation for this space. Again, we just rotate like this, the same way. If you rotate this way, you see that other 360 rotation is becoming straight. Okay. So we discover that there are two types of string end, the straight one and the hooked one. And the 360 rotation, they change into each other. So if you're using this straight one and the hooked one as a basis, this 360 rotation became 2x2 matrix. It just exchanged the two. And since it changed the two, well, it's the eigenvalue for that will be 1 and minus 1. But the eigenvalue 1, the state is the straight one plus the hooked one. And for eigenvalue minus 1, the state is a straight one minus the hooked one. So this is the integer spin. This is a half integer spin. So somehow, we already say that the string don't cost energy, as you already demonstrate. You know, only the string end costs energy to you. The string itself don't cost energy. You can, the string long and short, it's just part of ground state, you can fluctuate. It's just part of ground state. But somehow string have some effect on the interference on the quantum number. All this has no energy. But this string is not null. It has some effect. The effect is has some, you know, have some high effect on this specific rotation. So you get this different statistics. Different spin. Yes.
And so are both the string, open string, and the hook energy eigenstates?
Okay. So this is a very, very good question. And let me see. For this particular, I think for this particular Hamiltonian, let me try to see. I think they probably not, and only this combination energy eigenstates. And this will become clear later. We'll study this in the more. We'll study the string operator more carefully. Then it becomes more clear. And these two combinations are eigenstate, but the straight and the hook itself are not eigenstate. And so, but this really demonstrates. Okay, so let me just. Let me just summarize this. So we will have a discuss something later. Is that again from the dancing rule, from the way we describe how things fluctuate, we get a wave function, we get a fractional spin. It's just a first thing, you know. So this line of thinking really goes through, you know. And we after you get the fractional spin, we can get other things. You know, you can say, now you say, well, the under string can be spin 1/2 or can be spin 1. We know, well, there's a spin statistical system theory. Usually, integer spin are boson, half integer spin are fermions. Do you have that? That's a hint, very strong hint. If this combination have half integer spin, what is their statistics? Whether spin statistical theorem apply here, what is statistics? It turns out that indeed, this one is boson, this one is fermion. We can do the similar calculation. In next class, we'll do that by exchanging two end of strings. And then you can get other properties. So therefore, this really became, you can start to see a systematic theory for this kind of a topological order or Lagrangian entanglement, through some quantitative description of a dancing pattern, we get Hamiltonian, we get physical property. So based on these ideas, we make push them further, develop further, we make a comprehensive theory for the entanglement. So this is how we approach, how we try to build a theory for entanglement. And this three blackboard basically is a simplest way you can see basically roughly the whole picture, not complete picture, but roughly from the mathematical quantitative description from dancing pattern looks like lead nowhere. But actually, if you push it, you can go quite far. And you can even get physical properties. And actually, you can probably get all the physical properties. So then there's some kind of mathematical framework or physical framework, which is, we can have a systematic understanding of Lagrangian entanglement. So in next class, we'll push it further to study their the statistics. And also, we'll push it further to consider another dancing pattern. Because in this dancing pattern, the reconnection, the wave function is the same. We can modify that. By considering another dancing pattern, we say the waveform changes sign when things reconnect. Then that gives us another dancing pattern, and all these properties will change. You'll get different statistics and different fractional speed. So you can see there's a close connection between the dancing pattern and the pattern entanglement to the physical property. Okay.